Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 103 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Patty Flint of the upcoming FFPS podcast. Welcome to the show, Patty. Now that you've changed, you know, your whole demeanor and look from two seasons ago, you know, when you were... just a descendant of the real Roger.
Hey, how you doing, Rob? You're right. Yeah, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, but we're here and we're ready to go. Looking all forward right. to it. I have my European clothes and cigarettes, and we're all ready to rock and roll.
All right, that works really well. But you gotta just be careful about the FBI.
Yeah, I will. I will.
Yeah. So we finished things off yesterday when Dana was on, but she unfortunately couldn't stay on for the rest of the week. So, Patty was more than happy to fill in for the rest of this week. And so minute 103 begins with Hans finishing his sentence and ends with Walt trying to save his job. Okay, so yesterday we had our good friend Hans telling Theo that if he wants to see a miracle, you know, I give you, and then it stopped. And we had to wait until today to find out what they were going to say. And he was going to, and what he says is the FBI. So,
yeah, incredibly suspensefully, too, which was beautiful. I love that delay in between each letter. You know, he really needs to underline this.
Yeah, well, it worked really well, you know, especially for us by cutting it down by the minute. So, you know, anyone who hasn't seen the movie yesterday heard, you know, you want a miracle, Theo, I bring you the, and then it gets cut off and you have to wait until today to find out what that is. So, you know, that's pretty much the only thing that we see of Hans in this particular minute. He just says the words, the FBI. But as you said, he says it really, really slowly, the FBI. You know, he's spelling it out very phonetically, I guess you can say. And as he ends his speech, the shot changes and we see a grainy view from a camera as we are looking down at the screen below. I mean, I've talked about this before, and this is another great transition shot, you know, where they will show us something from one particular viewpoint, whether it's a camera or a TV or something like that. And then, you know, they seamlessly just switch it to a different view of the same scene. So we see the grainy view via the, you know, the 1980s security cameras.
Yeah.
And we're not really sure what we're seeing and stuff like that. And then, you know, we see the people really walking, right? And then... Yeah. We see we hear one of the FBI guys say, I said I want the freaking building shut down. And he's like standing by a truck. And did you see what's written on the truck?
I did. Make every day a safe work day.
Yes, very good.
And this is, as you know, well, I'm not gonna call him Jake Fratelli. I'm gonna call him Robert Davi, obviously. But as he's smoking a cigarette over an open main in the floor, I hope there's no gas down there.
Yeah,
because he's really not making a safe work day.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, you understand why that truck is there that says make every day a safe work day. You know where where their headquarters are located, right?
No, I don't know where the headquarters are located.
So it's like it's in a. I mean the basically the base of where they're you know organizing everything. It's in a construction area. Okay, there's like a construction area next to the Nakatomi Building, which is why we're able to see all these different like tractors and bulldozers and stuff like that around there, and therefore this truck is there. You know, and it makes sense that in a, you know, in a construction environment, they would have a sign that says make every day a safe work day. Yes, I love the fact that you pointed out the irony of, you know, of Big Johnson, you know, smoking a cigarette that it could just at any point fall in and go off in a, you know, in a burst of flame. But
I think the irony as well as the irony of that is the carnage and chaos that's going on in Nakatomi.
Yes.
You know, That's not a safe work day going on in there. I don't think there's any way of regulating that in any way.
Well, it's also not a regular work day. You know, it's not something that
No.
you would expect.
Although you might expect it from a Christmas party. I'm not overly sure. I've been to a few wild ones.
I don't know what type of Christmas parties you've been to, but you know, but I've never been to any party, Christmas or non, you know, where there are explosions happening, you know, from 30 floors up, and you have papers flying all over the place and glass and all this stuff. You know, I don't know, but I don't know. Maybe you guys, you know, maybe in the Royal Police, you guys do things a little differently. I don't know.
Yeah, we did do things slightly differently. Maybe that's a story for another time, though. I think.
Ooh, sounds like it. It means that you might have a great off the beaten track holiday story for us later this week. I don't know.
Well, so here's my thing. You talked about exposition. You talked about the transition of scenes. I even went through looking at the orange flashing lights on the top of the vehicle. So the orange flashing lights in the CCTV footage, in the security camera footage, you can still see them operating behind the cast as they're doing their thing. You know, as they're stood there arguing, there are still those orange lights flashing, which I found quite good. You know, it could have been one of these faux pas where they didn't have anything going off, but when you look at it, it's very cleverly done.
Well, there's a bigger faux pas here. If you're looking at it, the shot from the security camera, they're all standing on one side of the truck.
Yep.
And when we get to see the real shot, they're standing on the other side of the truck.
Along the side of it, yeah.
You know, so, you know, that doesn't line up at all.
No.
But, usually when someone's watching a movie, you're not going to pay attention to these things. But because we're dissecting it, it's a little easier to catch these little fun things.
Absolutely.
You know, which makes it really interesting and enjoyable to do so. So he uses the word friggin'. Do you use the word friggin'?
I'm a military man, so I've used it fairly often. But
you've used other synonyms.
Oh, I used to collect swear words and strange things like that. I've got almost an encyclopedic knowledge, but not of friggin', I'm afraid. That's one that I'm going to have to look up.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, friggin' is a milder version of saying the word friggin'. You know, that's what it comes down to. You know. And it's something that for instance, for people who watch The Real Housewives of New Jersey, it's something that they say all the time. You know, they're constantly using it. Mm-hmm. There's just so many different words that are used instead of saying the actual, you know, the word fuck throughout the whole thing. So we've gone through it in I think last season. I went through it and we talked about all the different variations of it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But you know what? But you can sort of say that the word friggin' is more like it's not really a profanity. It's what's known as a minced oath, right? Which is basically it doesn't really have any meaning on its own. But because it has such a similarity to the word, you know, it actually makes sense.
Uh-huh. So it's the swearing without swearing, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. I mean, I saw that there are a whole bunch of different, you know, you could say freaking instead of it, freaking, mm-hmm. frigging. If you're a Battlestar Galactica fan, so you got fracking. You know, there's all these different options of saying something that's very similar. You know, a lot of times it's, you know, when you're using it on TV, it's because they can't actually say other words, so that's why they use the word friggin' instead.
Okay.
But like I said, it's used in place of saying. So it could be for people who don't want to say the word, or for people who can't say the word. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole time. So. You know, it's not a profanity on its own, but I guess you could, you know, it's like I remember as a kid, you would say, you know, the fire truck instead of, you know, the fire or whatever, it is. You know, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I get
So,
it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why people people use that instead. It's sort of a way of keeping things calmer and tamer, I guess you can say.
Yeah.
But
Doesn't it
maybe it makes
doesn't
a difference. Maybe it makes
doesn't.
a difference of where you live.
Yeah.
You know, that there are certain areas that would use the and like I did a little bit of research on this, and I found a map of the US, and it shades it of you know how many people it they call it the freaking frequency use map, something like that. Okay, so it basically shows that you have the southern parts of Texas, you have California, you have some of the upper point of the Midwest states, and then you have all of New England, and those are the places where everyone will say "fuck." And you also have bottom of Florida, okay? But then in the middle of America, that's more places where people are going to say "frickin'" or "freakin'" or any other type of variations of the word.
Substitute swear word, yeah.
Basically. I mean, they say that the highest convention is like in Texas, and then when you're going the other direction, you have places in the Appalachians, where in the Rockies and stuff like that, where most people will say "freaking"
Okay.
instead of thing. Again, I was able to actually find a site that has six different maps that talk about the usage of each of the words. You have "freaking" and "frickin'" and "friggin'" and what else is here? And "frickin'." Oh, actually, I said "frickin'." No, I said "friggin'" and "frickin'."
Yeah.
You know, it's like it just keeps changing all over the place and stuff like that. They basically say that it has a lot to do with regional boundaries,
Okay.
depending on where you live in America. You know, I'm sorry, I didn't check for England. You know how people will say it and stuff like that. Looking for a map of that. Other uses are some people use the word flipping.
Yeah, that's big in the UK.
Yeah. So those are basically the different types of of variations of words that you can say here. I mean, I even found examples in like of each of these, but I don't think we're going to go into them. I don't think I don't think we really need to go that far into it.
We'll be okay.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. So then we hear Big Johnson. He says, "I said I want the freaking building shut down." And then the response that he's given is, "I got a problem." And he goes, "I got a switch here." And he goes, "I don't give two sh about your switch. I want the building out, dark, DARK. Hold on, you don't understand." And that's the city engineer who's having the argument with him. Okay, the city engineer is played by an actor named Bill Marcus,
Okay.
who has only six movie credits, okay, and 28 TV credits. But what I found very interesting was is that he was on three episodes of Moonlighting, which starred Bruce
Bruce
Willis,
Willis connection.
and he was that's right, and he was in three movies with Bruce Willis. He's in Die Hard, he's in Sunset, and he's in Blind Date.
Oh,
So
wow.
I wasn't able to find if they have a personal connection between the two of them. But apparently, there's some reason that he is in four different credits
Yeah.
with Bruce Willis. He must have, maybe they're old friends or something like that. And Bill needed a little job. And he says, "Hey, we'll let you be the city engineer. You can get to argue with Big Johnson."
Yeah, you can be the guy in the suit with the white hat. That's the way it
There you go.
works. White hard
Exactly.
hat suit, you know. That's that
Right.
it's one step away from having a clipboard, that, isn't it? You know, those guys out there with the clipboards. I remember you saying in one of
He
the
doesn't
other
have one.
I
I
don't
think
think
he.
so. Let's have a it might do.
I don't remember if he's holding a clipboard, but
He should
he should
do.
be.
He should do. No, he's hands free.
No, he's using his hands. That's right. Okay, and he basically says, "Hold on, you don't understand. You can't do it from here." And then we hear from down below, someone says, "Yeah, you could." Now that actor is an actor named Rick Dukeman,
Yes.
who I'm very familiar with. Rick Dukeman. I remember first seeing him back in, I think it was 86 or 87. They had a HBO telethon called comic relief. I know in England they have something else called comic relief. It's not the same type of thing. Maybe it's the same type of thing, but they did this in America for a number of years, where they had Billy Crystal, Robin Williams, and Whoopi Goldberg were hosting a comedy telethon in order to raise money for homeless. And I would love to be able to see it again. I haven't been able to find it. Maybe I'll be able to find at least some clips to put up about this. So I remember seeing Rick Dukeman there for the first time, and he ended up having his own special on HBO, at least one, if not two.
Yeah.
He was born in 1952. He passed away in 2015 at the age of 62 from diabetes.
Oh, okay.
And he has 22 TV credits and 27 movie credits, including The Burbs, Die Hard, Baseballs, The Hunt for Red October, The Last Boy Scout, and Groundhog Day.
Oh, yeah.
So a shout out to Bubba Wade on that one for Groundhog Day. I'm sure you know who Rick Dukeman is.
I
remember when I saw him in this movie, it jumped out at me because I was like, oh, I know that guy. He was on Comic Relief. And then, you know, he's moved on to other things.
You just reminded me there of, again, Bruce Willis connection, Last Boy Scout.
Yes, Last Boy Scout.
With he's the guy sitting by the pool.
That's
the
right.
Bad guy's car crashes through it. I was like, I knew that guy.
That's right. Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes. And in The Hunt for Red October, which is John McTiernan connection, he was, I think he was like the door gunner on the helicopter that's flying Alec Baldwin out to the middle of the North Sea.
Okay.
So yeah, but again, it's a McTiernan connection there.
Absolutely.
So he goes, yeah, it could, and then the engineer goes, it can't be done from here. I got the radio. You can't do it from here. You can't do it from down here. I'm telling you, it's got to be done from downtown. They've got to take out a whole city grid. We're talking 10 square blocks. And, you know, I mean, first of all, I love this argument between them.
Yeah.
You know, Big Johnson and the city worker, you know, are having this argument. It's a typical argument between like a boss and a worker.
Yeah.
You know, it's the type of, you know, a lot of times most of us, it doesn't matter what field we work in, okay, in real life, you know, not when we're doing movies by minutes. But, you know, there's always the idea that, you know, there's the overall boss who doesn't quite understand the intricacies.
Yep.
Is that the right word? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Of everything that we're doing, right? And they say, okay, I want you to do this. And they don't realize it's not just a question. It's not just pushing a button. There's something that it's much more complicated than that. And, you know, the idea is, then us as the worker has to try to explain why that isn't feasible, what they want to do. And that's more or less the type of argument that the two of them are having here.
Yeah.
You know, Johnson's saying shut it down. He's like, well, I can't shut it down from here. It's more complicated than you think. It's not just pushing a button and then, you know, we take out all the electricity here.
Yeah. And then Rick comes in and says, no, it's easy. Check this out.
Yeah. And at this point, you know, we have our good friend Robinson. He decides to wise up, and he's looking at the political fallout of it all and goes, 10 blocks. Johnson, that's crazy. It's Christmas Eve, man.
Yeah.
There's thousands of people. And then little Johnson says, you have to go wider. And then he says, I need authorization. Authorization? How about the United States government?
Yeah. I'm liking all the pointing that goes on here. It's a good old argument going on with lots of pointing and shouting. And,
yes,
you know, I love all that stuff.
And then Johnson points and goes, lose the grid or you lose your job.
On Christmas so Eve.
Then Rick Dickerman picks up the phone and goes, yeah, Central? And then we hear on the other side a voice, yeah? This is Walt down in Nakatomi. Mm-hmm. Say, listen. Would it be possible for you to turn off grid 212? And then we hear a screaming, are you crazy? And then Robinson goes, maybe I should call the mayor. And then Walt goes, no shit, it's my ass. I got it. And then he gets cut off because it's the end of the minute.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, it's a great conversation, great argument, the way that they they do this whole thing. It's just, it just works really, really well.
Yeah. And I did spend, as soon as I first saw Big Johnson walking through, I was expecting him to suddenly start singing in classical, in opera, you know, start singing something from Madame Butterfly as he did at the Goonies. He was like, this is, he can't do serious, surely, but yeah, he really can. And
yes, he definitely can.
Yeah. And you know your military conversations. This is just like most meetings you'll have with everyone. You will have the guy, the big officer who wants something done, the junior officer who says, "Yeah, it might be complicated," and then the young guy going, "Of course we can do that."
Yeah, of course, exactly. So I mean, I actually looked up to see if I could find, you know, if there is an LA grid. Electricity grid 212, but I couldn't find anywhere which like showed me the how the grids are all split up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean 10 square blocks is pretty big also.
Yeah, that's a good bit of real estate to be shutting down on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I mean the one thing I was able to find was an article about the difference between the population density in LA and New York.
Okay.
You know, which basically, you know, it doesn't tell us everything here that I was hoping to find out. You know, I was hoping to find out, okay, how many people could theoretically be living in a 10 square block area. But obviously in LA there are less people in certain areas, mm-hmm. than you would find in New York. In New York you would find them to be a lot more crammed together. And stuff like that. So, I mean, what I found was that in New York, there are 156 areas that have 15,000 people or more per mile.
Wow.
Okay. And there are 156 of those, as opposed to in LA, there's 75.
Okay.
Okay. And that is, so in New York, it's 51% of the entire area,
mm-hmm.
and in LA that's only 15%. So only 15% have a population density of more than 15,000 people in a square mile.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's pretty amazing.
And I guess you
think about that.
I guess that area of LA would be industrial, you know, or commercial, or you know, this financial. Is it a financial district? Is it, you know?
Where Nakatomi is? Yeah, I mean, again, this article that I found doesn't differentiate where, you know, it doesn't tell me that we're talking about Century City or anything like that. But the idea is that area doesn't have as many people living in it as you would find in New York. Mm-hmm. You know, New York, there are much more crammed areas and stuff like that.
Okay.
So yeah. And I also wasn't able to find, the size of the entire electric grid. That I couldn't find either. Maybe it's classified information. I don't know. Or maybe I just
I would say not big enough if they keep on having blackouts and if they keep on having problems. But you know, that's just me.
That's probably true. That's probably true. So did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No. I mean, there are a couple of things, you know. I mean, the Dwayne Robinson stuff we'll go into, I think, in the next episode. You know, there are certain phrases, and here in the UK, we don't get these phrases as often, but we'll talk about them in the next episode, I think.
Right. Okay, so, I mean, the script changes things a little bit, changes around the chronology of things.
Okay.
So it starts off by having it says first of all, once Hans tells him, you know, the FBI, so Theo goes, "When you're hot, you're hot."
Okay.
Which they cut that out.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing.
No, basically saying, you know, when you know what you're doing, you do it great.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. So yeah.
I'm just not sure whether it fitted in.
Right. Then it says, as we saw on Theo's screen, the Johnsons and Robinson and Powell are by a manhole with a city engineer. A big control box is there, cables snaking to the ground where another city worker finishes welding a last connection. The guy in manhole, "We're spliced in down the line. Little Johnson, do it now." The engineer throws giant levers inside the manhole, sparks sizzle, and a massive contacts clunk. Okay.
Okay.
And Then we basically go back to the vault room. Okay, and there's an entire scene that doesn't appear in the movie. It says Theo and Christoph and Hans huddle over the computer monitor screen as if it was a warm fireplace. Theo points at the computer screen. All they can do is wait. We hear the hum of a portable generator. The lights go off. The computer screen stays on. Theo looks over at the safe. Safe LED readout says fiber optic time lock cannot be disarmed at this location. Terminate sequence? Yes or no? And it says, damn, it didn't go. That's Christoph says that. Christoph finally has some line in the movie.
And they
Then
got
Theo
it.
says, they're on the building circuit. It's too local. Encourage them to be bolder. The only thing left for them is the city grid. Worried, typing. They may not do it. And then it says, just as the Johnsons are looking smug, all the floors go back on one by one. So in other words, their first attempt to turn off the lights didn't work. Okay. And then little Johnson goes, oh, shit. Turning to the engineer. And then he goes, cut it again, go wider. The engineer says, I can't go wider here. I'd have to call downtown, have them take down one of the city grids. You're talking 10 square blocks. And then Robinson says, 10 blocks? And then he turns to Big Johnson, are you crazy? It's Christmas Eve, thousands of people. The mayor will scream bloody murder. Big Johnson then says, we must shut down the building, go wider. The engineer, I need authorization. And then it continues the way that we already know. You know, where he talks about grid 212 and, lose it or lose your job, that type of thing.
Okay.
So I obviously it's cut down for time. It's something that wasn't needed. I think it would have been nice to see it because it shows even more incompetence by the feds, which is one of the things they're trying to show here.
Who doesn't love
You know, that
watching
it,
that?
no, but that's one of the points of this movie is to show that the feds have this plan and their plan doesn't always
Yeah,
work. You know,
and the Hans and his buddies are fully expecting that.
that's correct.
They're actually counting on it.
That's right. That's right. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Hans Hunt Day, where my guest will give their top five Alan Rickman performances. So what have you got for us, Patty?
Okay, so I have to add, I have literally just finished watching Eye in the Sky, which was his last role with Helen Mirren, and that blew me away, that movie. Incredible. If anyone hasn't gone and watched it, it might be something to go and see. However,
Is that on your top five, or is
no,
that,
because
yeah?
I
Oh,
was
okay.
I kind of ummed and ahed with my top five and ended up coming back to various ones, and you'll see why. I think it was more iconic because of how he lost for Stone. Alan Rickman's first foray into the Harry Potter franchise. We got to see the original darkness of the character, so that kind of, and the way he portrayed himself, this shadowy dark character that everyone should fear. I really quite enjoyed that. But you see later on down the line, he kind of his character sells. Number four, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where he played Marvin the Paranoid Android. I think it's fantastic. It's deadpan. It's an emotional role without actually, and you can almost see his face. You can almost imagine him doing it, carrying out the role, even though you can't see him. So number three, Dogma, the Metatron. I love Kevin Smith movies. I think they're fantastic. Just the spoonfuls of irony that were in this movie, and the sort of sticking the middle finger up at popular ideas about religion and everything else like that. But then having this character in there that everyone would sort of, I don't know, relate to, but then at the same time think, well, should he really be doing that?
Right.
That's kind of Alan Rickman's character to me. Number two, Sweeney Todd, Demon Barber of Fleet Street. I mean, he's not the greatest of singers. We know that. You and your guests have discussed that previously, I think. He's not the greatest of singers, but he sort of emits this great emotion that I really appreciated. He was a savage, but then soft in his love for the other characters, or the love for the other character. And of course, one, Die Hard, his first ever cinematic role. You know, a classically trained actor turns up and just carries out probably, arguably, the best British bad guy in cinema, I think.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that, even though he's supposed to be German.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But you know, as soon as you see him, you go, who is this guy? You know?
Yeah.
And he's got this kind of sociopathic... this sociopathic character, this ideology, but then still at the same time, you're kind of going, you know, this guy knows what he's doing. He's a smart guy. He's organized. He's this, he's that. Let's see how he gets on, you know. Or at least that's how I feel.
Okay, great. Great. Thank you very much for that. So why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Okay. Well, I have a new podcast coming out called the Flint Family Pet Services Podcast, which should be available on Spotify and various other platforms. You can find me on www.flintfamilypetservices and also on Facebook.
All right, excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. And finding me is very simple. All you have to do is do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!